Kendra Fisher on episode 49 of It's Not a Straight Line. And what I love about Kendra's story is, you know, she was an athlete, a goalie for Hockey Canada, had the chance and the skill to go to the Olympics and the work ethic. She got the word, she'd made the team, but mental health had different path for her. She decided she was going to step into public speaking after 5 years of dealing with it. And she speaks about how the day she started to participate in her mental health and the day she took giving up off the table was the day a lot of things changed. She's impacted so many lives throughout North America and the globe. Kendra Fisher up next on It's Not a Straight Line.
Hey, I'm Jordan Harding. I grew up watching my dad put on that suit and tie every morning and go out to successfully climb the corporate ladder. I thought I wanted to be him, but I was wrong. I needed to be me. To do that, I had conversations with incredible people to learn how they figured out this whole thing called life. I learned how they overcome adversity and pick themselves up when they've been knocked down. Now, I'm sharing those discussions with you so you can apply those same learnings to your life. Welcome to It's Not a Straight Line.
Today on It's Not a Straight Line, we're joined by Kendra Fisher, who I've gotten to know through the Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer event over time. And Kendra, I'm really excited to have this discussion. And if I understand it correctly, you know, you were 4 years old at the time watching your big brothers play hockey. You realized you wanted to, you know, get in there and play. And then you realized goalies could play the whole game.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm going to be a goalie. I'm going to play hockey. You realized girls could play too. You had this dream, Kendra, of playing for Team Canada. You even heard those words, like you made the team, you made Team Canada. And, you know, then you had to walk away from it because of mental health. And you went on this incredible journey. I know it's been a journey, but you decided you no longer wanted to be silent. And you wanted to speak across the country and in the U.S. about your journey and sharing it. And I know you've also gone and you've won 3 gold medals with inline hockey as a goalie. You come out to our event every year, you play goalie, and I know you've just been through such an incredible journey, Kendra, so I'm so excited to have this discussion with you today. And thank you for joining It's Not a Straight Line.
No, I appreciate the invitation. Sorry it took us so long to get to this conversation, but life gets in the way. We both know that.
Life gets in the way. And you've also got your own podcast called Speak Easy, which is incredible. There's been amazing guests like Kaylin Osman, Tessa Banam. So I encourage everyone to go check that out.
Thank you.
Kendra, when you decided, you know, I'm not going to be silent anymore and I'm going to speak, what kickstarted that career for you? And how did you say, I'm going to get in front of all these people all the time and tell my story?
Begrudgingly. You know what? It was unfortunately a really tragic moment that led me to sharing my story. Like you just shared, you know, I had very different plans in my life than being a professional speaker. I wanted to play in the Olympics and I wasn't going to settle for anything less. But unfortunately, my mental health had other plans for me. And I walked away. And I think during that time when I walked away, I put so much effort into surviving and coping, but I also put so much effort into keeping it a secret because everything about living with what a diagnosis of mental illness had brought into my life, none of it kind of equated to what I wanted the world to know about me. I wanted to be that superstar goalie. I didn't want to be the person who couldn't be alone and couldn't, you know, go to school anymore and couldn't work anymore. And so as I kind of went through this journey of learning to manage my mental health, I also learned how to master hiding it. And that was something I was always very proud of. But unfortunately, in 2010, I just happened to be at the Ontario Women's Hockey Association's head office when the directors of the league came back and they had just been at the funeral of a 14-year-old girl by the name of Darren Richardson. And many people know her story. Her father, Luke, played in the NHL. And Darren, tragically, at 14 years of age, took her own life. And I sat there in the office that day, and unbeknownst to them, they had set this down in front of me. And as they shared the story with me, I just remember in that moment thinking, I'm part of the problem. Like, I'm part of the reason that kids like Darren and so many others don't know that we can live with this, that we can have a great life, that there is help and there is hope and there are things that we can do to kind of change that journey for ourselves. So really, it took sitting there in that moment, realizing how much effort I had put into surviving my own mental illness, but also getting to a point where I was doing it well. Like, as you mentioned, I had kind of gotten to this place where I was able to live again. I was playing Team Canada inline. I was still playing at the highest level of women's ice hockey in the world. And I was ashamed to share this with people. And so recognizing the impact that silence had was really what it took for me to move in a different direction. And it was actually my psychologist who asked if I could share my story. I went to her. I told her I wanted to help somehow. And she asked me that. And like you said, I mean, public speaking, what a horrible idea for somebody with anxiety and depression and OCD and. I mean, nothing about public speaking is comfortable, but it was far more comfortable than every night that I couldn't figure out how I was going to make it till tomorrow. So that's it kind of pushed me in this direction, and I'm so grateful it did.
And you talked about like not knowing how you're going to survive tomorrow. And Kendra, I don't know if it was on your Instagram or in a podcast, you said something that really stuck with me. There was a point in your life when you decided you're not going to run away anymore. You're not going to, I don't know if I want to say it, you know, take your life, but you're going to move forward and you're never going to think that way. How did that come about? Because I think that's important for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think I got to a point. And I mean, my diagnosis happened shortly after I quit Team Canada. And when I got that diagnosis, the next 5 years I spent just kind of in this space that felt like a sentence. And that's the best I can do to describe it. I mean, it felt like I was living the sentence of what I had been diagnosed with. And it made my world really small. Pain and fear can really be isolating, and especially when we are not participating to experience differently or don't know to. I mean, back then, unfortunately, I didn't know anywhere near what I know now as it pertains to mental health. So here I was kind of going through the motions of doing what was being recommended. I was taking medication. I was talking to a psychologist, but I certainly wasn't participating. I wasn't, you know, actively engaged with my psychologist. I wasn't doing all of the other things that I now know help me. And I would say for a solid 5 years, it was just kind of going through the motions of existing. And that's how it felt. I wasn't living. It was just, you know, I took my medication. I had dropped out of school. I couldn't work, you know, through the grace and privilege of having parents who are financially stable. I was supported and cared for. You know, I spent a good 5 years of the only thing that was in my life really was hockey.
Yeah.
And I wasn't leaving my apartment. I wasn't functional. And when I got to the end of that 5 years, I realized that I couldn't continue that way. That wasn't an option for me. And I realized at that moment I had to make a choice. And it was either give up or figure out a different way, because this wasn't it. And I like to say that was the day I took giving up off the table.
That's what you said. It was the day that giving up off the table.
And I think the beauty of it is it's almost this reprieve, right? Like, it was this relief. It was like, okay, I would wake up every single morning and it was a fight for, am I going to survive this? Am I going to get through this? Is this the day that I can't do it anymore? And then once I consciously decided, like, okay, that's not an option. I'm going to survive this. So how does that look? It was like I took half the work off the table. It was like I no longer had to wake up and figure out, okay, which way does today go? It was, okay, today goes forward. How does that look? And now all of a sudden, instead of having to fight against the possibility of what may or may not happen, it was I was fighting for a purpose. And it's kind of been what has driven me through it all. And I mean, there have been some really tough moments since then. And in every one of those moments, I am so grateful. And I have such gratitude for the fact that that was a decision I made, because it really, it takes that initial struggle out of every morning.
Yeah, it's so true. Cause I've said on this podcast, I've you know, I have anxiety and I've dealt with depression in my past. And that struggle every morning is so difficult when you're going through it. And as you talk about that 5 years you went through, it must have been really hard to take that off the table. Like, was that just a moment? Like, it must have been through a lot of therapy and through other things. Or was it just a moment you flipped? Where you're like, I'm not.
I think there's a table. I think there's a piece of it that maybe is a little bit of the athlete in me. I think there's a piece of it that's very much the, you know, you get told to do something that you don't particularly want to do, and you do it because you've been told to do it. I didn't have that like outright defiance for no, you can't make me. I don't wanna. And so I think there was internally that, and I think I had some kind of foundation of resilience and responsiveness to that existed in me, gratefully. But also it was just kind of this like, I think it was also the day I decided to participate in actually getting better. Because yes, I was doing all of the right things. I mean, I did what I was told. I took the medication. I was told alcohol, you know, it's never going to make it better. I quit drinking. I haven't had a drink. It'll be 25 years this year.
Wow. That's amazing. Congratulations. Yeah,
So, I mean, it was just kind of this like, I did the things. I did the things that I was told. And that's how we understood taking care of ourselves back then. How we understood wellness was, you know, the medical world gives you the remedy or the solution or the steps to take towards getting better. You take those steps and you get better. And that's just it's not that linear, especially with mental health. And there is a necessity to participate. And I think it was as much of a taking giving up off the table, but also it was the willingness to participate and actually being part of it. Because I had seen my psychologist for 5 years at that point, and arguably I was the worst patient she had for 5 years, because as much as I wanted to manipulate those sessions, I could manipulate them. If I didn't want to talk about what was actually bothering me, I didn't have to. If I wanted to just kind of glaze over the thing that felt really uncomfortable, I could choose to do that. And so really, you have to participate. You have to kind of dig in and get involved. And I think it was kind of simultaneous for me, where it was that, okay, if I'm deciding not to quit, then I'm actually going to have to be a part of this. And so now I'm going to be a part of it.
And how did, so you said your psychologist actually got you that first speaking opportunity. Like how did it all kick off? Like how did you say to people, hey, I want to talk about this, I want to start?
I certainly never said that. I think it was probably more, are you crazy? No, I don't want to go and be a public speaker. I remember, like, when I was, how old were we when we had to do those like speeches when we were kids, and you'd be standing there with like your little cue cards. I remember even practicing in like my kitchen, and I'm hyperventilating and the cards are falling on the floor. No, it was certainly never I want to. It was that day, actually, that I was at the office and I got the, when I saw Darren's memorial, it really hit me. It really affected me a lot. It was very much a moment of like, look, like here I am, somebody who's living with this and doing well. At that point, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I was doing well in comparison to where I was. And at that point, we're talking like 10 years after my diagnosis. And I just remember thinking, I've got to be able to do something. And there was no part of me that thought, okay, I'm going back to school to become a doctor, or I'm going back to school to become a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Like that wasn't my path. So I called my psychologist and I was like, hey, this is kind of what's going on. And at that point, I mean, with my psychologist, I wasn't seeing her often by any means at that point. It was kind of intermittent. She was the card in the back pocket that I always had access to when I needed. And she told me to come in and see her. And I went in to speak with her. And I just remember her eyes filling up with tears. And I was just like, okay, like, you want to lay down on the couch? Like, we can talk about this. I don't know where to go with this. You're not supposed to be crying.
This is the opposite of what's going on.
No, but at that point, I already had my doctorate, I think, my honorary doctorate in psychology for as much time as I'd spent there.
That's right.
And so, you know, I just explained to her and I was like, how can I help? Like, what can I do? And she happened to be very close at the moment with the chief psychologist for the Toronto Catholic District School Board. and some other colleagues of hers. And so she just said, look, I really think it would be helpful if you could share your story, if people could. And at that point, we were just starting to get research on how powerful and impactful peer support is and lived experience and the effect that has on people. And when she first said it, I just laughed. I was like, come on, like, Kate, come on. There's not a world where I'm a professional speaker. Like, I'm really good if I'm, you know, in my goalie equipment. I can do the center of attention on the ice, but I can't, like, stand in front of, I don't even want to be in a room full of people, let alone the one with the mic that they're all staring at as I talk about the hardest days of my life. But I agreed I'd try. And it wasn't even a month later. It was the Catholic School Board. They had a Stop the Stigma symposium happening.
Yeah.
And I went out, and the first time I spoke was to a group of students, and it felt horrible. Like, it was not a moment of like, oh yes, this is my calling. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. But at the exact same time, it was a moment of, this is my calling, and this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Because for as uncomfortable it was, the number of people that directly related to or came to speak with me after and their messages were exactly why this conversation needs to be happening.
And you said something so, so interesting there, because it, you know, the podcast is, it's not a straight line. And you're like, I am not a professional speaker.
No.
Like, and now you've been doing it for what, 15 years?
Yeah.
Probably a bit longer.
Yeah. Right, but in there.
Let's go back to early on, because we're talking about, you know, careers and life. What did you kind of know, if you talk about your hockey career, like, hey, I'm going to be good at this. I'm going to be a good goalie, and I'm going to go for it with the Olympics. Like, do you remember?
So I grew up playing guys hockey, since we've aged me with how long I've been speaking and how long I was sick before I started speaking. So now that we've got those numbers.
And you were in Kincardine, big hockey town.
Big hockey town, but big boys hockey town at the time. There was no girls hockey. We didn't have girls hockey. So I actually grew up playing with the guys, and I played guys hockey right through till, I believe now it's U18 AAA. And it was fantastic. But at that time, there was very little exposure to women's hockey. And my first exposure to it was just kind of like all the girls on the boys teams in the area. There were one in this town, one in this town, one in this town. We all came together and made a tournament team and traveled down to the city to play in a girls tournament to kind of see what it was like, because we were all curious. And one, we did really well, but two, it was just this whole new world. And I think that's when it really started to kind of open up to me that there was that possibility. And because we were at those tournaments, some people started to see me, and I had always been blessed to have great success with my team in Kincardine. We won some really cool tournaments. I mean, like, we won the International Silver Stick Tournament for North America. We won provincials. We won. So, I mean, we had some great success. And I mean, I don't know that it ever got, I just love sports. Like, I don't know that it ever kind of sunk in that, like, this could be a thing. It was just kind of I'm going to keep playing, and darn right, I want to play at that tournament, and absolutely, I want to make it there. And it just kind of kept being possible. So I just kept going. I don't think I ever had this, like, moment of, I'm good enough. I don't know that that was conscious.
What about, like, did you have that confidence? You must have had that confidence. Like, I am here. I'm good.
I must have.
I always find this interesting with that.
I was such an anxious kid. I was so anxious. So to say that I carried that level of confidence wouldn't be accurate. I mean, I don't even think, even now I'm uncomfortable with you asking me this. I'm okay. What sarcastic, witty quip can I come out with here that makes this feel comfortable to me? And it doesn't ever. I'm really lucky that I was gifted as an athlete, and I had a lot of success in hockey, and I had just as much success in fastball and hardball. I excelled at tennis. I loved tennis. Tennis and hockey were kind of my, which is it going to be?
Wow.
But tennis, my coach for tennis, actually, they wanted me to move from Kincardine to Toronto when I was like 11. They wanted me on the circuit. And I was an anxious kid, and it was undiagnosed. And the thought of sleeping away from home for a night at my friend's house was too much. So moving away from my parents at 11 wasn't happening. And that's actually why I went into hockey, because I ended up going, I think if I had to pick those paths up until that point, I didn't know if it was going to be tennis or hockey that I went all in on. But it was the fact that my tennis coach wanted me in the city young.
Yeah,
the default became hockey.
I know this is when you backed away from hockey, but what was it like being a goalie and hearing those words like you made Team Canada? Like that's pretty cool.
I wasn't who I am right now as I was receiving those words. So
that's right. Yeah.
Who I was in that moment was a terrified teenager who was convinced every second of the day that, you know, I was dying. And I had my father sitting next to me in an office overlooking the rink that all of my teammates and my peers were skating out onto. And, you know, somebody just said the words that up until that point were the only words that I thought I ever wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And I had no ability to receive them from a place that felt like anything that I really want to remember. It was horrible. There's so many ways, and I think it depends on the day you catch me with it. I mean, right now it's like I'm fighting back the emotion, and it was hard. It was just kind of this like, this is what I've wanted and I can't do it. And I knew I couldn't do it. And I've been asked 1,000 times since then, do you think you could have stayed? And do I think I could have forced myself to stay? Maybe. But do I think I would have survived if I had? Like, in fact, literally, would I have survived? I'm not sure. I was that close to desperately needing help and intervention in where I was that, I mean, I like to think, and my ego and my pride would tell me I could have pushed through anything, but I was very sick. I was very sick, and I was very unable to advocate for myself at that point. I had no information. I didn't know what I was dealing with. This isn't a point where it's I'm dealing with anxiety and depression and I can't push through that. This is a point of I don't know what's wrong with me. And a cardiologist, a neurologist, a gastroenterologist, my doctor, and about 5 different ERs can't tell me what's wrong with me. So it was the sheer terror of, great, I made the team, but I feel like I'm going to drop dead. So what do I do with that? And that fear was so real, and the uncertainty and the unknown was so consuming that it wasn't even an option for me. Like it was at that point, it was, how do I get somewhere safe? And the only place that I felt safe in that moment was in my apartment, which,
yeah,
I mean, rationally now, why? What existed in my apartment that was going to keep me safe if there was some huge medical emergency? But that rational thought doesn't exist in that moment. And so, I mean, it's humbling. I love and I appreciate the fact that I can look back and with absolute honor be amazed that I got to a place in my hockey and in my sport where that was even an offer. And I, you know, at the same time, that's forever going to be tied to heartbreak.
Yeah. And there's so many times in life where things like that are tied to heartbreak, and heartbreak happens, and it's hard. Have you, you know, to this day, do you look back and you're like, you talked about pushing through, and I think we can all be so hard on ourselves. Just Kendra today, like, are you a person that's really hard on yourself? I know you've talked about you're a sensitive person in podcasts before. Like, where are you at today?
Am I hard on myself? I think so. I think, yeah. I always will have a decent sized expectation of myself. I'm far more gentle about it now. I have a lot more grace for myself in terms of what that has to look like. I think for a very large part of my life, I've had this idea of what success looks like and what achieving and achievement looks like and how I have to present when I'm doing that. And I am somebody who got taught very harshly through some some life events that I wasn't learning from and I wasn't listening to and I wasn't paying attention. So I just kind of kept like doing the whole, yeah, I can push through more. I can carry more. I can do more. I can keep going. I'm just, you know, I said I'd never quit. So I'm never going to quit. And life just kept going, hang on a sec, you're not listening. Like, there actually is another way and you have to consider it because you can't sustain this. And I, you know, in the past 2 years, definitely the last year, if we're really narrowing it down, I got taught a lot about life and about myself and about how it's time to kind of transition out of that all or nothing mentality. And it's made a world of difference for me. And I think that I'll always still be hard on myself in that I want to achieve. I want to be a high achiever. I want to participate. I want to have a big life. I want to have those crazy dreams that everybody is like, that's unrealistic. I want an unrealistic life. Like, I don't want to just do the expected and the attainable. I love pushing that boundary and that's what fuels me, I think. But I've learned new ways to do that that are far more supportive of myself at the same time, which really has allowed me to become a far more present person, I think, in those moments.
And you also, over your career, it's really interesting, you're a firefighter as well, right?
Yeah.
For how long were you doing that?
Oh, technically, I'm still a firefighter. I had a bit of a health issue. And again, I mean, this goes to the whole, it depends how much you believe in our body keeps score. I happened to believe in the concept that our body 100% stores. And, you know, if we're not listening and if we're not learning, our bodies will make it impossible for us to not listen at some point.
Yeah.
And I was diagnosed with endometriosis years ago, but it really came to a head about 3 years ago now. And symptomatically, it really took over. And endometriosis, in a very simplistic explanation, comes with a lot of pain. And I think it's been deemed like one of the 20 most painful illnesses in this world.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, well, you're never going to.
Yeah, I won't. I don't.
Lucky for the male population at birth, you won't have to experience it. So for me, I was firefighting. I've been a firefighter now for 7 or 8 years. I ended up having to go on leave. Again, unfortunately, endometriosis is niche enough that there's not a lot of expertise in it. I ended up having to wait a year and a bit to see a specialist, and then I had to wait another year for surgery. So just kind of going through that, and part of my undoing over the past couple of years has been my inability to use my body physically. And I mean, it's been very challenging for me because movement and physicality has been a lot of how I've supported myself both physically and mentally.
Yes.
And so having that taken away and living with chronic pain, it added a lot of complexity to the struggles I was having with some of the big things that were happening in my life, which were happening at the same time. And in addition to that, just kind of day-to-day life, not knowing any given day if I'm going to wake up mobile or if I'm going to be curled up in a ball with a heating pad all day. As somebody who, you know, hasn't had a drink in 25 years, I certainly wasn't going to allow painkillers to be part of my recovery or maintenance of it. So that was off the table for me. And so it's really been difficult. And I've actually been on leave now for 3 years. And it's only this past month, actually, have I gotten to a place where I'm having like back-to-back days of relatively pain-free movement. And I'm so grateful for that. But it hasn't come because I had that athlete mentality of screw it, I'm going to just run as hard as I can and lift as hard as I can. Because I had a few false starts with that post-surgery. And I learned those lessons the hard way.
And I think I just saw that you had your kids out and you were playing fastball again. You won a tournament. And like, I love that you said you hadn't done that for a while, but I love that you brought that back into your life and you had your kids come out and see you and everything.
It's so huge for me, right? I mean, my kids, and that's been heartbreaking for me because my kids have never really gotten to see the athlete in me. And the athlete in me is such a huge part of who I am and so much of what brings me joy. And I'm somebody who I've always known, but I've really recently come back to, we just get away from joy in our lives. As adults, we are not playful. We don't play in our lives anymore. And it's so detrimental because there's so much that we connect to in play that helps us through every facet of our life. And I've really, especially over the past 3 years, and then that was kind of preceded by COVID, and through that whole period of time as well, going through an illness with my father and losing my father, I mean, I just have had no, there hasn't been light. There hasn't, not, and like, I mean, light, like not heavy. Like, yeah. I mean, there just hasn't been moments of playfulness and joy. And being in pain constantly has really kind of robbed my kids of that version of me. And it sucked. I mean, not long ago, my youngest, he was 5, he's now 6, but he was 5 at the time. And he said, "Mama, how old are you?" And I said, I told him, and he says, "I wish you were younger so you could still do stuff with us." And it just shattered me. Like I had to like do that moment of like go hide in the bathroom and ugly cry for a minute. Cause it was just such like a moment of, they don't have a clue. Like they don't know. They've heard the stories. Like they see that the, you know, between the volunteer work I do and the opportunities that I get because of where I went to in sport, they can kind of tell there's something about it that might have meant I was okay. Like I, you know, I get to go do road hockey to conquer cancer. I'm out with the Marner Assist Foundation. Yeah. You know, so I'm out on the ice with all these, you know, amazing people that they just idolize, and they're kind of like, "Why is Mama there? Like, what's she doing in there? What's why? Like,
how did she get to be invited to the Marner Assist Foundation, take pictures right? with them?" Yeah.
And so they have this inkling that there's, you know, and they've heard like, "Yeah, your mama is a really good goalie or a really good ball player, really good." And they're like, "Oh, okay." And it's just this story, but they have no connection to it. So for me to, and I mean, the tournament that I just played, I mean, it was slow pitch. It wasn't fastball. And it was, I mean, again, in the scheme of things, you know, nobody's going down in a blaze of glory following a slow pitch tournament, but it was just them getting to see me play and me enjoy that. And the fact that, yeah, I can hit a ball and I can pick up a grounder and I will make some plays that it's going to be obvious that, you know, at some point she probably had a pretty good handle on this sport. And they were so amazed. Like the just in their eyes, it was like, "Oh, like now I get it. Now I can see like there's this in that connection," like just hearing them cheer for me. And I went up and I hit a home run. I hadn't hit a home run in 3 years. One, because I couldn't rotate my body hard enough to actually do it. And two, I couldn't run that out. And I was able to do that. And like I got around and they were just standing there staring at me like, "Whoa."
That's like, so awesome.
Right. And I mean, and that's what I mean, like kind of reframing that moment, you know, like there's no, I look back on my athletic career and I'm like, "Oh my gosh," like I'm sitting here right now just brimming over hitting a home run in a slow pitch tournament on a rainy gray day in Brampton. But when it comes down to what it's actually about and what's important, it was just them kind of getting a chance to connect with something that is so inherently me and just feels so joyful in me. It was beautiful. And it was kind of just that gift of getting to experience that again and understanding how important that is in my life and how intentional I need to be in making sure that those are part of my life and being able to again. I mean, I get to.
That's such a beautiful story. And I think what you said that's so key there is, and I've thought about it a lot, like adults, we don't experience some of those lighter joy play moments. And I think it's just part of our society. Like, how are you going to try and intentionally bring that in to your life more over the next, I don't know, year, 6 months? Like, have you thought much about that after this tournament?
there's this whole like body of work. I don't know if you've ever heard of Martha Beck, but she is phenomenal in the space of anxiety. And she does a lot about being curious and playfulness and creativity and how the disconnect from that kind of has such a huge impact on us and our nervous systems. And everything I've been focused on in the past year has been nervous system related. And I mean, it's just been absolutely life-changing for me. But it's funny because there's this, I mean, there's a lot of neuroscience behind it, and the neuroscience being, you know, we have the analytical side of our brain and we have the creative side of our brain, and we spend so much time focused on the analytical and problem solving. Like that's where our work lives live, and that's where adulting lives, you know, got to get the bills paid, got to get meals made, got to make sure there's gas in the car. Just everything lives on that side of the brain. And we start to underuse that other creative and playful side of our brain, and we don't intentionally put effort into that side because it's not checking all the boxes that we need to get through in life. And it was funny because I had such an obvious experience with it the other day. I was sitting down with my boys, and my youngest, he's really gotten into art, and he likes to do this, play this game where it's like, well, he'll take a blank piece of paper and he'll draw something and he'll pass it over and you have to draw something, and then you pass it and the next person has to draw something. And at the end, you have this masterpiece of like a mishmash of, you know, a pizza spider with a bird, and like you just, it's phenomenal. But I watched the two of them, and it's so easy for them, right? Like the paper comes in front of them and they're like, oh, I'm going to draw a horseshoe. And the next one's like, okay, and the horseshoe's going to have like this chimney coming out of it. And I'm just like, they hand it to me and I'm frozen. Like, what's good enough to add to this? What do I do? How's it going to look good? And I'm just like going through every analytical thought in my brain in wonder, just being like, what happened to just being able to like playfully be creative? Like these two are, they're using their imaginations, and we absolutely fail to use our imaginations unless we are forced to. And so for me now, I'm just going to every one of those moments that like I have typically with my children been like, guys, not my forte. Like you want to go kick a soccer ball, I'm in, but no, I don't know what your Lego guy is saying to you. Well, I'm sure as heck going to figure out what the Lego guy is supposed to be saying, because I want to push myself into discomfort always. And the funny part is how much I've learned that kind of the disconnect of just our childlike nature has to play in all of the stress and our inability to get out of kind of that survival mode that we exist in.
And so many of us are existing in that all the time. And it's so hard to even say that, because it's just the way. I love how you're saying, you know, now that Lego person, I'm going to have that imagination. I'm going to know what it's going to say.
I'm going to figure it out.
And
I am going to gauge it by my children's reactions, because I sit there and like after the fact, he's like, well, why are you only drawing old fashioned things? And why is it so like, why does this have to be so? And like, cause I drew a birdhouse here. I was thinking like, I'm brilliant. Like I'm going to draw a birdhouse. I looked out my window and there was a birdhouse, and that's what I came up with. And he's like, it looks just so like, and I was like, okay, fine. Like it's too, I'm trying too hard. Just loosen up, have fun
that's
with
so
it.
True.
Like, and it was just such an innocent reminder of like, mama, this doesn't have to, there's no expected outcome here. You can just mess around with it. And not only can I just mess around with it, but I can mess around with it. And that can be the only thing that matters right now. It can be the only thing in the entire world that matters. And if the only thing in the entire world that matters is the smile on my kid's face as I'm sitting here drawing something silly on a piece of paper, I mean, there's just so much wrapped in just that one little thought that backs up everything that we are now learning about, you know, getting away from expectation in the way we are and having more ease and you know, some focus on peace and presence and existing right here, right now. And I mean, you go to the greatest philosophers in life, and it's what they've been telling us all along. They were just telling us in language that maybe we weren't listening to.
Oh my God, that's so powerful. I love how you just worded that. What about Kendra? What do you have? I know right now you're doing the Million Reasons Run, which is something very important to you. I think it's throughout the month of May. Like, if people want to donate, what is that all about and how can they donate to you?
Yeah, I mean, in short, so the Million Reasons Run, it's actually a virtual event that started during COVID, and it supports all of the children's hospitals across Canada. And essentially what you do is you go onto the Million Reasons Run website and you can join there, or you can join a team there. If you're looking for me, my Instagram is at kfisher30, and I have a link there in my bio for that. You know, for me personally, we lost a son, actually, and in the month of May. And during COVID, initially what we were doing kind of in his name and his legacy was with the bereavement program at the hospital we lost him at. And just because of COVID, we weren't able to participate in that the same way. So this event came up, and for me, it kind of became a way for me to, one, I mean, unfortunately, we lost River at 32 weeks. So we, you know, we had 8 hours with him. And that was, it's something that everybody gets uncomfortable talking about. And at the same time, I want to talk about it, because if I don't talk about it, then he never was here. And to me, that does matter. And so I started in kind of in his name. And as I continued doing it, and I know that nothing that we could have done would have changed it, but if raising money for the children's hospitals that support other families could potentially prevent somebody else from going through that experience, or at least support them going through that experience, then that meant the world to me. Unfortunately, the following year, our youngest was then diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic. So he actually became a patient at SickKids Hospital in Toronto. And so, you know, my reasons just kind of kept growing and growing as to why this was so important to me. So it's an event that I champion. I'm one of the ambassadors for it. And it runs through the month of May. And essentially, you make some type of a commitment to cover so many kilometers during the month, and you try to raise money to support that. And for me, too, it's another huge one, just because it's kind of coexisting with my ability to finally move again. And so last year, this looked a lot different for me than I wanted it to. So it's been a pretty cool experience to just get out there in movement and do what I can and participate. And I know it seems heavy, but at the same time, I mean, the work these hospitals do is just, it's phenomenal. I mean, the teams there, my son's team, you know, I can speak directly about that. It's just any opportunity to help the people who show up for our kids, I'm all in.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so I encourage people, and I'll put it in the notes of how they can find out more about the run and how they can support you.
Thank you.
And thank you for bringing up, you know, that your son with River. And I think that talking about it is what, you know, keeps his memory going. And
yeah.
What about any other, and I've seen you've been speaking at some schools, any other, what's next, Kendra? What do you want to, or how can we help you? Because I'm so grateful that you've taken that time to share your story, and you share it with thousands of people, and you don't have to do that. And if I look at your life, you're someone that's inspired me, that I've gotten to know, and your life, you know, it's not a straight line, but it could have gone so different. It could have been so different. And, you know, you inspire so many people. So I commend you on everything you do.
I appreciate that. I think for me, what's next is whatever gets to be next. I mean, I've really kind of had this huge shift in the past year where I'm coming up on a year having lost Dad, and Dad was one of my best friends. For sure. And it just a lot of perspective has kind of come around differently for me. And I always had this kind of like plan, you know, we were talking about, you know, success, and we were talking about the expectations we put on ourselves. And I've always had this kind of, this is what it's got to look like.
Yeah.
And I don't have a clue what it's got to look like anymore. I think that, you know, I took some some education over the past little bit here just to certify in coaching. And so I have a lot of experience with mental health coaching. I'll never stop that in terms of working with sports teams and individuals in that area. Speaking, obviously, I think is kind of at the heart of a lot of it. I really love the connection and the ability to show up for each other. And I think the messaging there for all of us is so huge, and it's free therapy for me, right? I mean, I get to go out and talk, and it's equally as cathartic as it is something that others can participate with. And I think that that's just incredible. And right now it's just kind of taking it a day at a time, right? Like I'm still recovering. I'm not even a year post-op yet. So I did have to have surgery. And so right now my commitments at this point are all volunteer based. Yeah. I have the Million Reasons Run this month, and then I am getting involved with a type 1 diabetes organization as well, and a walk that they're doing in June. I do another one every year for a family in July who lost their son to suicide. And obviously, I have the honor of participating with Road Hockey to Conquer Cancer still. And so, I mean, those are kind of the in stone ones. And otherwise, we're just kind of see where it goes and taking it as I can.
That's amazing. Well, Kendra, I always wrap up these podcasts with like three quick questions where you can give a quick statement or a few words. What's something as your sons grow, like what's something you share with them about careers?
About careers?
Yeah. And looking at yours, because you would have never thought that you'd have the career, like, you know, getting a message of Team Canada, then, you know, you've been a firefighter, you've spoken everywhere. Like, it's like, who would have thought that?
Nobody. And I think that for me, it's about purpose. I think at this point, I think that there's so much to be said for making sure that you connect with what you're doing. Because we used to have this model around careers where it was very functional and success oriented, and success was defined financially, typically.
Yes.
And to me, the importance of that is so little. I mean, at the end of the day, if this past year has taught me anything, and there have been some big lessons this past year, at the end of the day, it's love, right? It's about love. When we die, it's about love. It's about who's there with us. It's about, you know, nobody regrets the dollar they spent or the dollar they didn't have. Nobody regrets. People regret the way they treated people and the way they showed up for others and the way others made them feel. And I just lean so heavy on that with my boys. And I do my best to make sure that they understand that, yeah, there's going to be a lot of things in life that you have to do that don't necessarily align with what you want to be doing, because we do have responsibilities. But at the end of the day, keep your purpose in mind so that as you are navigating that and as that evolves, and it will evolve. I mean, anybody who thinks they're going to have it figured out at 20, yeah, come back in 20 years and tell me how that went for you. And anybody who thinks that it's too late to start something new at 40, not a chance. Switch it up. Do what it is that you want to be doing and love doing. And yes, do it responsibly, but it's not too late. And purpose. Purpose is a huge one. Yeah.
As you continue to get out there and speak and do the next things and go to these great events, what's that purpose for you?
Showing up, connecting. Connection and showing up is everything. And I think that I've always felt that way. My father had dementia and Parkinson's. And so that was, you know, 4 or 5 years of watching somebody I loved change drastically in his abilities, in his cognition, in his presence. And I fought it. I mean, it was devastating. It was so easy to be tortured by watching what he was losing and focusing on what he couldn't do anymore. And it broke me. Like it seeing that in somebody that was just bigger than life for me and will forever be my hero was it was an experience I wouldn't wish on anybody, and an experience that I wouldn't trade a second of, because somewhere along the way, I had it suggested to me that I got to go through this with him. And the relationship that I had with my father was so loving and profound that he trusted me with caring for him and showing up for him when he felt most vulnerable. And I got to do that. Like I got to meet him where he was at. And in moments that I might have lost to, this is too hard, I don't want to see this, I can't be here for this, instead, I got these incredibly beautiful, life-changing, profound moments of connection with my father exactly as he was. And I wouldn't trade a second of that. And in speaking in this journey and what I do and the conversations that I have, as hard and as heavy as they can be sometimes, and they are, because I'm out there talking about things that connect to people who are in crisis, who are in a place of not necessarily knowing how to find tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I get to do that. I get to show up. I get to meet people where they're at, and I get to be accepted by people where I'm at. And I used to strive so hard for perfection. I used to think that it had to look the best. It had to be the best. And the greatest lesson this journey has taught me is it has to be exactly what it is. It has to be my willingness to show up without fear and just be honest about where I'm at. And that honesty invites the same in return. It invites safety. It invites a space where people no longer feel the need to wear that mask and pretend that they can carry it all and act like they are doing fantastic and they are great and they are at their best. And when we truly are willing to meet each other where we're at, it is absolutely, it's unspeakable how incredible that strength ends up being and how much we excel as people when we do so in community. But when we force people to isolate and we allow people to feel like the only way for them to show up is as a version that we expect of them, we diminish people's ability to have a great life and to be connected in such detrimental ways. So for me, like, my purpose is I get to. There's so many times in my life that I could have given up. There's so many times in my life where, you know, it would have been conceivable. I've been asked more than anything, how do you still get out of bed in the morning? And the answer is I get to. Like, I'm excited.
I can tell you feel privileged.
I'm
gratitude. I can feel
blessed to be invited into spaces where people trust me with that.
Wow.
And all I can offer is the most honest version of myself in that moment. And the hard part about living it all out loud is sometimes I get it wrong. Sometimes I start down a path, but I find out it wasn't the right one. And because I'm living it all out loud, I get to walk it back in front of everybody, but I get to. Like, I get to walk it back. I get to say, hey, guess what, guys? That was a real bad idea. I screwed up. That was not the way to go.
Yeah.
But I get to.
You get to.
So, and then judge me or don't. But either way, I get to just show up in whatever I'm in as however I am and connect with people who are willing to share that safety with me. And how amazing is that?
That's amazing. There's so many takeaways from this episode. And that, what you just said, connection. You get to having that purpose, being able to be that vulnerable person, because then that invites that back. Kendra, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Take care.
What did you take away from our chat today? I'd love to know. Let me know on Instagram at It's Not a Straight Line or connect with me on LinkedIn. If this episode was helpful, would you mind leaving me a review on whatever podcast app you use? I'd really appreciate it. You can always go back to previous episodes to hear more insightful conversations to help you build your own unique life. Thanks for listening to It's Not a Straight Line. Until next time.